Hello, motion picture brains. That's you, fans of light, darkness, composition, celluloid, zeros and ones. Blah. Welcome back to another episode of the Through the Lens podcast, the unedited audio of our full conversation with a cinematographer. Okay, so in this episode, we spoke with the gorgeous and mysterious William Rexer II, who is known for, amongst other things, and this guy has shot a ton. The films are famous. Not on My Watch. Book of Love. Looking for Kitty. Poster Boy. He operated some on Fahrenheit 9/11. Fierce People. The Groomsman. I Think I Love My Wife. Chris Rock. Purple Violets. The Accidental Husband. Let's see here. Nice Guy Johnny. Ceremony. Something Borrowed. Oh, that he was an additional cinematographer on that. Friends with Kids, Newlyweds, The Fitzgerald Family Christmas, and Movie 43. And in two of the previous, he was actually also a producer on some of those. We spoke to him about a bunch of his films and some of his television work and some of his commercial work, because he is a very interesting guy. I have to say that his ability to talk about engagingly about photography, about what he does, about the practice of what he does, is really, really infectious, and he just loves doing what he does, and it comes off, and he knows a phenomenal amount about lenses and stuff like just he's just really both a technician and an artist and a businessman, because he has that mind about him. At least that's what we got off him. That's what we got off him, that and the $200 that we fleeced out of his coat. Sorry, William, that was us. What follows is the uncut audio of my conversation with William. We met in a hotel room in New York City in October of 2012, and if you want to check out the Hollywood video version of this interview, you will see that hotel room. We only used two cameras. We used the lights in the room. We threw a pillowcase around one light. That was William's suggestion, by the way. We knew we had to get some diffusion around it. We didn't know how, because it was one of these glaring, weird, fluorescent bulbs. Shot everything, and I don't know, it was probably off. The magenta green was way off, but it ended up looking great. Why? Because William was there. You can find it at crafttruck.com as season 1, I believe episode 11, although I could be wrong on that, or youtube.com/crafttruck. You can also subscribe if you're feeling mysterious. It should be noted that during this interview, William scratched his head, thought very long and hard about every answer, and proceeded to take his time. Thank you very much.
Did you start shooting like music videos or commercials, or was did you just straight to narrative?
I started off in natural history documentaries.
Oh, what a great background.
Yeah.
Because it's pure photography.
Yeah. I mean, I started off first as an assistant cameraman with National Geographic. That was sort of my beginning. So, with a great guy named Barry Braverman, we were a two-person crew. And did a film called The Pacific Edge, went from, you know, across the coast. So that was the beginning. And then I worked with him on 8 films. So
and eight
just
films?
Yeah, where we were just a 2-man crew. And so I ran the Niagara, loaded the cameras, the
you
bounce
ran the
light.
Niagara.
Yeah. And so I did the sound. I did, you know, so did a little bit of everything.
That's unbelievable. Are we recording, by the way?
We are now.
We are.
Alexis?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we. Where did we cut in, by the way, Alexis?
The audio?
Yeah.
About 5 minutes ago.
Oh, really? So even all that stuff about Barry Braverman and everything?
I caught that. We cut in right after you said, okay, so we're talking about Mick Flooding, basically.
Oh, mixed, yeah. No, but I meant mixed everything.
Yeah.
So that's funny. So when you were doing these films, was it just like go to the Sahara and go...
Mostly they were U.S.-based. There was one in Poland, but I met him. I went to Dartmouth, and he was a Dartmouth grad. And he came up through and needed a camera fixed, and I was the TA in the film program. So he put it up on the bench. I looked at the camera. He said, hey, what are you going to do during your off term to make money? And I said, I don't know. So he said, you want to come work with me? So we started to work together. And so I ended up traveling doing geographic films.
And were they fun? I mean, it must have been fun films.
It was amazing. It was amazing. He was a great teacher because it was, you know, just the two of us. So I had to, you know.
Do you know the first thing or the last thing about exposure or about, I mean, about all?
I did. Things? I mean, I took every film class that the college offered.
Right.
And my father was a theatrical producer.
So
I grew up in theater. My mother had a theater company when I was a kid. So I grew up hanging lights and, hanging Fresnels and hanging Leco. So I knew all the stuff about lighting. And I knew about sort of theater. And then when I went to college, I started to learn everything about photography. So I sort of put the two together. And
funny. So we're here in a hotel room. First of all,
yes.
Welcome back to Craft Truck. Through the Lens. That is the name of our space, by the way. It's Craft Truck.
Gotcha.
So that's where this is all
going
into. Yeah. We're in a hotel room in New York City. Where we have been generously given the time of William Rixer.
The second. Yep.
Junior.
Jen, sorry. Can you just double check your package? You're
in
the blind spot.
It says it's too low bat on. It says on.
Do you need another battery?
No.
All right.
No, we're fine.
All right.
Besides, I'll just yell into yours. Yeah. We've generously been given the time of William Rexer II. Junior?
No, second.
You just don't go by...
Well, my father was Robert. My grandfather was William. And he was alive when I was born, so that's where I got the second.
But in Hebrew, your name is... I'm kidding. Okay. where you have recently come off a show, we'll talk more about that. And I think it's good to actually talk about this because it's something that the realities of the business in the moment.
Sure.
Is something very good to talk about. But what we can talk about with you, you are a photographer, mm-hmm. a cinematographer who has worked on documentaries,
yep.
narrative films.
Music videos,
commercials.
Yep.
You've shot 35. You've shot video. You've shot every format there
sure.
is. And more importantly, you've shot, in the narrative field, you've shot comedies.
Yep.
And you've shot darker pictures.
Yep. Fierce People is very dark.
And you've shot with Ed Burns, yep. which is a completely...
talky type movies that are more about relationships, yep.
So
with no budgets whatsoever.
No. Now... Let's for a second. Let's talk about that. The films you shot with Ed Burns were Newlyweds and just recently.
Well, I've done six films with him, and then
six films,
and then some short things as well.
We're just going to edit out the part where I didn't know you shot six films with Ed.
Yeah,
you didn't shoot Sideways from New York.
I did not. No.
Okay, so you shot.
No, that was Frank Prinzi, who I know as well. But yeah. I shot Fitzgerald's Family Christmas.
Yep.
Newlyweds, Nice Guy Johnny.
Right.
Purple Violets.
Uh-huh.
The Groomsman.
Yeah.
Looking for Kitty. Those are the six films with Eddie.
Ed Burns, not the guy who created The Wire.
Right.
The actual writer.
The writer, actor, director.
Director, yep. Star. Is one of the rare voices, unique voices in cinema.
An amazing guy.
Today.
Yep.
Great to know he's an amazing guy
yeah.
because, you know,
it's a great dad,
yeah.
great husband, good friend.
It was another guy, we were interviewing, I swore I was not going to name drop, but we were interviewing Gordon Willis
uh-huh.
2 days ago.
Right.
And
one of my heroes.
We just talked to him for right. an hour and a half. Yeah. He'll go from hero to God. He mentioned somebody's name as who came to visit him, and I said, is he nice? He's actually an asshole. And I was like, so deflated.
Yeah.
So it's so great to hear that Ed Burns is a nice guy. Just describe the process of, because he tends to do very talky, not improv. They don't seem totally improv.
They're not improv. He's
scripted, but...
He's got a great sense of dialogue.
Right.
He gives actors freedom, but then brings them back to the script always. And he's very focused. Like, we'll have a design of how the shots are going to lay before the actors get there. And, you know, so he's very specific. But they feel natural at improv because he can write language really well. He can, write dialogue beautifully. So, and he also, you know, he recognizes that these type of cameras, the Canon 5D is what we shot Newlyweds on.
Right.
We had no idea whether it was going to work. We just thought, all right, it was my scouting camera. We had a $10 million film that was supposed to happen that got canceled. We had a cast. He said, let me see, I have an old script. And he worked on it for 2 weeks, and we put the people together, and we started shooting with the 5D, and we kind of felt it out. We said, this is really liberating. So we went with it.
And so you were supposed to be making a $10 million picture with Ed.
Yep.
And you were scouting, and it got canned.
Yep.
And you just replaced that movie with Newlywed.
Exactly.
This is like a story from like the 50s Hollywood you never hear anymore.
Yeah, and I mean,
amazing.
It is so much. He's great that way. And we bought a Red together. We bought the Red One together.
Yep.
Same type of idea with Nice Guy Johnny. We thought we were going to get this one other project off the ground. It didn't get off the ground. We said, what can we
do instead?
It's beautiful weather out in the Hamptons. We know plenty of people out there. Let's go out there and shoot a film. And
did he have a script?
He put together a script pretty quickly. I mean, the nice thing is Eddie writes. He's like a musician. He writes every day. And then it might go somewhere, and he might go, I'm going to put this in the cabinet. I'll save this for another time. And then something like this comes up, he goes, I have the perfect script for that. He'll go dig it out, rework it. And
there you go.
Then there we go.
So when you made Newlyweds, on the 5D, I mean, you're talking shooting what, like 20 days?
No, we shot Newlyweds probably in a total of 12 days.
12 days.
Probably 8 days of principal photography, and then running around, me shooting commercials and me doing. It happened right. Newlyweds happened right after Friends with Kids. So Eddie was in Friends with Kids, and we were shooting that film, and he just said, "Let's go, jump into it." So we did.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Is there any particular sequences in Newlyweds that you're most fond of?
There's a really simple one with Carrie Bechet when she's on the bed. And it was just, we took the, it's a 20 mil. She's lying there. It just happens to be she's in the bed. And, she's just talking on the phone. It's just such a simple, it reminds me of like French New Wave completely. Like, and we jump cut it and just let her jump into different positions. And it just was so much fun.
Right now while you're talking, we're intercutting this sequence with Godard's, Breathless.
Good.
Just lying on the bed. You know, just we're doing a split screen.
Perfect.
Yes.
And that was the nice thing. I mean, that film, we went into restaurants and bars.
Yep.
And I would say, okay, let's go near the window. There's Christmas lights out there. That'll illuminate them. And we went and bought, we didn't buy the L-series lenses. We went and bought like the 1.4, the cheap lenses.
The T1.4 and the T1.8.
Yeah. And that's what we shot the whole thing with. No special gears, no map boxes. So we could sit at a restaurant that was open and shoot a whole scene and nobody would know that we were shooting. And we
What about sound? Just wireless?
Sound. What we did is we bought, not these wireless, we bought these little recorders that take compact flashcards, and every actor would get a lav and a compact flash put in their pocket, and we'd start it up. So if you had five actors around a table, they'd all have their mic, and usually one would fail, but the others would get picked up. And so everybody at the beginning would say, okay, ready? Three claps, this is take three. One clap, let's take one. And we'd just give it a voice cue, and away we'd go.
Okay, this is completely fascinating. What is Ed's sense of, if I may call him Ed, what is Mr. Burns' sense of blocking, of rehearsal? Is it just, let's just go shoot? Because, I mean, it's different. I mean, obviously, there's an advantage to shooting on 35.
Sure.
In that you have to give thought to what you're doing.
Yep.
You have to give extreme thought. And part, plenty of directors, cinematographers, editors have said that the worst thing that could happen is when, we have endless, because they just keep shooting. They shoot the rehearsal, they shoot after the rehearsal, they shoot everything, So it gives you more material.
No. We first of all, when you're trying to do a project in essentially 10 days, you can't do that anyway.
Right.
So we would never do that. Eddie and I also started off in 35 millimeter together.
Right.
Groomsmen and Purple Violets were both 35 millimeter films, full on with regular crew. I mean, they were 3.5 million, so they weren't big films, but they were still proper films with proper crews where we would board everything. Every page, we would have a diagram, knowing exactly where the camera was going to go. And then that was the A plan, and then something would get in the way or a performance would get in the way, and we would figure out some coverage in order to make it work.
Or the location would be slightly different.
Right, or we'd get to a location 2 hours late and light would be in the place where we couldn't shoot in that direction. But having an A plan made it all possible. And so approaching the digital world was very similar. I mean, we might watch a blocking unfold and say, okay, here's how this is going to work. But we never went into it sort of willy-nilly. We knew, okay, all right, here's how the scene unfolds. The camera should be over here. We've got the depth of the door. This plays the master. This is the line. You know, we knew, you know, we have a shorthand after doing six films together,
right? So you tend to work fast?
Yeah, we work very fast, particularly when you've got a small camera and limited amount of lights.
Now, as far as lights is concerned, do you try and run with a smaller crew, small amount of lights?
Well, again, everything varies. I mean, Eddie's, that type of film, we tried to go, you know, we did a lot of this type of thing where you're taking, you know, yeah. you're taking a light and you're wrapping it in a pillowcase.
You're revealing your secret yeah. here, by the way, because yeah. the minute yeah. you show that, yeah. for sure, yeah. Al went yeah. and just...
But that, you know, a lot of the time it was subtraction more than addition. Like, right. you know, you'd have a single light source like this, and I might wrap the back in black so that it's not all over the walls and that type, you know. But it was very, very simple. And some of the simple tricks are still what you use even in a bigger movie or even in a right. TV show. And, you know, there's nothing as nice as a Chinese lantern for, you know, a face, you know. There's nothing as nice as a piece of fabric as opposed to a piece of plastic to, right. to push light through. So on a bigger job, I might be pushing, you know, we might pull that wall and put a, you know, and put a 5K through two layers of diffusion. But here, you've got to...
Got to do work with what you have.
You got to work with what you have.
Well, and so you know, you still shoot a lot of commercials.
Yep.
When you're shooting commercials, I mean, maybe we can talk a bit about that. Typically, the story is that the client and the agency and the producer thinks you're nuts if you're not getting a piss ton of light.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, you know how to play that game.
It completely varies. I mean, it varies on how knowledgeable the client is and how what you're doing. I do, in the last couple of years, I've done a lot of work with the Phantom high-speed camera, uh-huh. where you teach yeah. a lot of people what actually a lot of light is.
So let's just explain this for people. When you're shooting at 300, 400, 600 frames a second.
2,700 frames per second for the Google Chrome commercial, for instance.
Oh, that was 2,700.
2,700 okay.
so
frames
2,700,
per second.
Now you're shooting at over 100 times regular frame rate, meaning that the...
Well, so 2,700 frames, 1,000 frames you'd need 41 times the amount of light.
41 times.
So if you're talking about 110K, all of a sudden you're now telling a producer you need 41 10K.
So this is 100 times the amount of light.
Right, right. So it's massive amount of light. We were doing a scope commercial, for instance, where we had a scope bottle hits onion and hits garlic and destroys it.
Right. Because that's what scope bottles tend to do, right. is destroy onion.
So we
and
were
garlic.
Shooting a bullet in yeah. hitting a hollow tip bullet and blowing the stuff up, and then we'd shoot a bottle and comp the two together. Well, in that, we're shooting so fast. We had a row of 24 Ks, so they're like 20 Ks, but they're 4,000
watts more.
And you have a row of those, and then you have a row of mirrors just underneath it, bouncing that back. You're trying to create shape,
yeah.
but everything's on dimmers. You bring it up. You shoot the bullet, you bring it all down as fast as possible. Otherwise, you're cooking the onion. You're cooking everything. And things catch on fire.
The old joke about commercials is light the lettuce, right? Right. Now you're really lighting the lettuce. Right, okay,
so there is, and there's a certain amount of knowledge that comes with it, figuring out how fast and how much light and all that kind of stuff that you need to know.
Right.
So some of that stuff is still very, you know, it's still very relevant. And no matter how fast these cameras get, no matter what, you still need to know
how to do that.
How to do it and how to make things have shape and have... So, you know, you can do it with a single light bulb or you can do it with 24,000 watts of light
times five.
Yeah. So it's...
140,000
watts.
Yeah. That's on an onion.
Right. The Google Chrome stuff was so much fun because we were... this great director, Aaron Duffy, was doing sort of Rube Goldbergian stuff where you'd have like a... Right. A shoe would drop. It would hit a keystroke, and you would create lightning, and with a Tesla coil, and the lightning would strike, and it would be what would happen is it would go across the screen, and what would happen first, going from Google Chrome to weather.com or the lightning, which was faster, and so shooting at 2,700 frames would reveal which was faster. So it was.
Wow.
Potato gun for epicurious.com. You know, there's all different types of things. So you'd actually see sort of a dissected fraction of a second.
So you happen to have fallen into being kind of like a high-speed guy now as part of what you do.
Yes, one of my lives. Yeah. And that came from being friends at a rental house with guys who were developing the Phantom camera. And when they wanted to test it, taking it out and testing it. So, you know, sort of sometimes things are luck that way.
Got it. Interesting. Back on your, first of all, have you shot television?
I have shot television.
Oh, this is the
My
job.
Show was just canceled today.
Okay, so yeah. just to put it on pause, what we're going to talk about right now is the fact that I'm not putting it on pause for this, I'm putting it on pause for us. I'm saying, you told me Adam Bernstein, phenomenally talented director, comes to you and says, I have a TV show that the network wants to make better, and I want you to be the guy to make it better with me.
Yeah.
I want you to be my right hand.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it was very close.
Yeah.
You two have worked together before?
We did a pilot for a TV show called Mercy that had a one season life. And he only did the pilot, and I only did the pilot. That's where we met.
Okay. So now he comes to you and he says, I want to do this. And now you go to shoot. Now, how far? So you and Dane Cook is in it?
Yeah. Jeffrey Tambor. Yeah.
Great cast. So where were you this morning?
I was out of the stage collecting the pieces of the camera equipment and bringing them back to the rental house.
Where were you in the shooting schedule?
We had already shot three episodes and had reshot sections of the pilot.
You reshot three episodes. You shot for presumably...
We shot 3 weeks.
3.5 weeks.
Yeah, 3.5 weeks, exactly.
18 days of shooting, you have a crew working, everybody's working. Is it all studio or is some of it location?
Both, combination of both. I have a great crew, I've pulled people off other shows, I've got all these people who have families and bills to pay.
How did you find out the show was canceled today?
The executive producer called and said the show's canceled. and I'd just flown in a new operator from Los Angeles, and, you know, so it was it's terrible. But that happens in this business. It's at the whim of a network executive who, obviously they were thinking that this show was going to replace another show. The other show got legs and they didn't need it anymore. So that's part of it. I mean, I think that's the bottom line was...
You're in a business and this product is...
Right. They can't have two shows that are about radio stations. And this was about... a radio station, and the Matthew Perry radio station show has legs, and they're gonna continue shooting it. So they're like, we don't need the other show. Uh-huh. So you get killed, and millions of dollars get flushed down the toilet, and no one will ever see the material. And even though we're very proud of what we did, and it was a good show, it doesn't matter.
So it came in by phone call, and then within how long do you have to dismantle it?
They'll have a week, pull it all down.
And then strike.
And we all put a lot of effort into it. I have a great gaffer, Scott Ramsey, who, it's just amazing. And, I just look at him, the night before we're sitting there talking about how to make this one area of the stage better looking. And, we're examining footage and talking about it. And next minute you're,
Is this the first time you've ever had a show shut down?
I've never had a show shut down before, yeah. So...
Well,
it's a fresh wound.
Well, I'm glad you can talk about it with a certain amount of stoicism
The good news is it's really, really busy in New York, and so I know most of the crew will jump onto other projects right away.
Right.
So that's,
And for yourself, you've got other things that you can move
on to. Yeah. No, I'm already, talking to my commercial friends and jumping into commercials right away, but I feel really bad for my crew. No matter what, they'll lose days of work, and... that's a big deal. So,
yep.
For people who are living check to check.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a hard business, and I think more than anything, I think anybody watching this can take out of it, who would take something out of it, is that your attitude about it is probably the most important thing, because you feel bad for the parts that you feel bad for and the parts you can't control. The biggest the most expensive feature that you've shot has been
Accidental Husband. Yeah,
let's talk a bit about that.
And that was a film that didn't really get out there that much because the distribution company went bankrupt while we were when it was finished. It was Bob Yari's company.
Yep, Yari Entertainment.
Yeah, and the distribution side of that went bankrupt while we were making the movie. So that was an issue with that. But it was a great, it has Jeffrey Dean Morgan, Colin Firth, Isabella Rossellini, Uma Thurman, Sam Shepard. It was a blast to work on.
What was it like working with Sam Shepard?
He was terrific. I mean,
I know
he's amazing.
I jumped to him, but the only reason I jumped, he's talking about it's most people go, oh, I recognize that guy. It's Sam Shepard, is that actor from Thunderheart? And I go, yeah, that's Sam Shepard, probably the greatest living playwright.
And he plays Uma's dad, and they're just terrific together. I mean, they were a great pair, and Uma was a producer on it, and she did a great job. And I mean, I think it's an interesting movie. I wish more people would see it. You know, it's one of these films that I think the banks control it, so. It never got its fair day in the box office.
What was your approach to visually designing that movie?
Well, Griffin Dunn directed it.
Yeah,
and
he's an interesting cat.
He's great. He's somebody you should definitely interview because he's amazing.
Well, let's get him then.
Yeah, he's amazing. I've done 3 films with Griffin. Griffin is we looked at films of the 20s, we looked at the films of the 50s, and they really wanted this to be an old-style romantic comedy. They didn't want it to be a new romantic comedy at all.
So
it was modeled after a Katharine Hepburn, Spencer Tracy type of film.
So you're saying screwball comedy.
Total screwball comedy.
Okay, so I hear that, and I think high-key lighting and strong highlight.
Yep, there was quite a bit of that, with a little bit of a modern edge to it. Longer lenses, a bit more dolly movement, not so much, not so proscenium. A little teeny bit more natural than that to make it modern. And we had we had Jeff Mulstock on Steadicam, it was fantastic. We'd assembled a great crew, and it was just a... It's sort of modern screwball romantic comedy. I don't know what else to tell you about.
Great. That's great. Is there any particular sequence in that you more than anything?
I loved. There was a scene where Colin and she are remodeling an apartment, and we had to have the apartment. We had it for one day, and we had to have it completely, torn apart and in remodeling mode, and we had to have it then fixed. So the easiest way to do it was to just take sort of that sheathing that you use, the plastic that you use for painting, drop gloss, and it was all splattered and covered, and hung it over all the windows and all the stuff. So it looked completely disastrous in terms of place, but it had such a beautiful quality of the light, because the hard light that we were pushing through for the next scene, it just was gorgeous. And they could walk anywhere, and they looked stunning. And it was just one of these accidental things. As soon as we started to put it up, we thought we were going to have to strike half of it. But it just looked, Uma looked so beautiful, and Colin looked fantastic in it. And it just was one of these magical moments. So that's probably one of my favorite, just things purely for a light. Yeah. So.
And as far as sequences, I mean, one of the questions I like to ask is, sometimes, as a cinematographer, you go to the theater to see your work.
Yep.
If you're lucky enough to see a rough cut, which doesn't often happen, but you go to the theater, see your work, there it is, it gets thrown up, and sometimes it's like, how could they have edited this way? It's like, I shot it. It was in the room. It was better than this. And then sometimes it's just like, oh, did this come out like just smoke and bang putt? So, was there a sequence in Accidental Husband where you saw the way it was cut and you just went, that's just such great cutting?
I have to say that, with Griffin and with Eddie, and even with Chris Rock, I spent a decent amount of time in the edit room. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, so I didn't have those virgin eyes of, each one of them, I went into the edit room a decent amount.
So tell us about that. What that means is that tells me that your relationship with them is much closer than just...
They're all friends of mine. I mean, they've become, through the films, they've become friends, but, with Griffin, I'd already done 2 films before that with him. And Fierce People, we all lived together up in Vancouver and made that film together. So we're really good friends. And so during the edit process, almost each step, they'd call me up and say, come take a look, and give me feedback. And we would. And so I was a very active participant in those
Got it.
In those processes.
And so do you like... Yeah.
Just to give you a quick start and stop.
A little restart.
Sure.
The 29 minutes is right now.
Oh, that's... Uh-oh. I've spoken too long.
Yeah, no, no, God, no. No, this is fabulous. I have to say, I'm just saying in the middle of this right now, we're going to leave... One of the things we're doing, by the way, is we cut the interview and overlay clips from the stuff we're talking about. Like, right. I'm going to need to get those spots that you talked about.
Sure. Those are pretty easy online, too. Yeah, you can find all the Google stuff. Google Chrome is right online, easy to download, too.
Great, okay.
Yeah.
But we kind of get it. But one of the things we're going to be doing is just a bonus feature. If you want to hear the uncut podcast, is put the uncut the audio of it.
Sure.
Uncut podcast. You know, maybe 1/10 of the people, 1/20 of the people go check that out.
Right.
So right now with the uncut podcast, I will say that I'm horribly, like, with the amount of time, I didn't get to see enough of your films.
No.
And normally I'm coming in and I've watched at least three.
Right.
That, you know, I've got a very good memory for specific moments, shots and everything like that. But in this case, I'm underwatched in your movies. But I'm so fascinated by everything you're saying, I want to go back and watch them.
What, Max Winkler's film, Ceremony,
yeah,
with Uma as well. Her on the beach the night after she sleeps with, after the sex scene, with Michael Angarano, the two of them walking and talking along the beach is one of my favorite moments in that film.
Why?
It was one of those moments where everything about it was natural. I mean, the two of them, the tide was low but on its way up. It was freezing cold. It was November. So they're in these boots. They're trying to avoid the waves that are coming up. I got to go on I put on a 1971 vintage zoom lens to soften everything up. And it just, the sunlight, everything about it, a lot of the time you want to shoot at 6:45 in the morning. By the time the actor gets through in hair and makeup, it's 9:45.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
and
yeah,
now
yeah,
you're stuck shooting it.
Yeah.
This was 6:45, and we were rolling at 6:45, you know. And Uma was willing, she was supposed to be like she just rolled out of bed, and she was willing to play it that way. And so she looked beautiful because she was unmade up.
Natural.
They were both were dealing with the physical elements, and we were far enough away almost all the time that they could act naturally and be themselves. And so we got 3 or 4 takes. I mean, it's just one of those beautiful moments.
Yeah.
So
sounds like kind of like a pure,
yeah,
a pure cinema kind of a,
yep,
experience. Like you mentioned Godard earlier, but that really sounds, you know, you had the camera, you had the actors, and that was it.
We had that, a bit of that in Nice Guy Johnny with... there's a scene where we're at the beach, and if you run down that movie, you'll see our leading lady is in the water swimming, and we got to the beach, and the sun was about to set. We were about 15 minutes before the sunset, and Eddie and I looked at each other, like, just not, how are we going to get this entire scene? The two of them are supposed to be talking, then she's supposed to go swimming. And it was a bay where it went out forever and never got deep. So we grabbed the tripod. Eddie's assistant and friend, Nick Newbold, grabbed the tripod. We both run out there. We shoot it. She comes swimming. She comes back. We shot the entire scene in that 15-minute window. We kept sliding down the beach because the sand dune got lower and lower, and the sun kept peeking over the top of it. So the sun is sitting there at the edge of the peak for, yeah, that entire time. And people said, how many days did that take to shoot? Because it doesn't...
It wouldn't happen
and under any other circumstances, except if you had having actors who were willing to jump around and do it, a director and a whole crew the whole crew was Nick, myself, and Eddie, so it was much smaller. But, you know, so
but
sometimes...
But you cheated it and it worked.
It cheated and it worked, and, yeah, and sometimes, yep, those magic moments are fantastic.
Ron Howard tells a story about shooting for Roger Corman, and Roger Corman sitting him down and giving him like rules of what to do and how to economize. And one of them is, you know, if you're ever shooting and the sun is setting, go to the highest point because you can get more sunlight that way.
Right.
And he's like, yeah, whatever, great. And then 10 years later, he was shooting Far and Away, and Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise, and he grabbed him by the arm and ran up to the top of the hill and shot the scene.
Exactly.
So it's great to hear an identical story to that, except even more so because you had to cut this long sequence together over a long period. Shooting for Chris Rock.
Uh-huh.
So how does he come to you? You know what? You know, he William Rexer. How does he come to, you know, how does he come to you, and how do you get the script, and how did that come about?
How did that? I mean, it came through my agent.
Yeah.
And honestly, I thought I was meeting with Charles Stone because Charles was originally meant to direct that movie.
Okay.
And I was in Los Angeles shooting a commercial, and I came back to New York, and I went into an office, and Adam Brightman, who was the executive producer, and Chris were at the desk, and there was no Charles Stone, and I sat down, and I thought, oh, maybe this is the initial interview process that I have to talk to Chris
first. Chris, the actor wants to know who's lighting the room.
So we sat down and we talked about movies, we talked about what we loved, what we didn't love about movies, we talked about art, we talked about photography.
Some of the things that came up were...
Well, and we talked about show business, my father being a theatrical agent. My father used to represent Henny Youngman and Cab Calloway and Victor Borga. And Victor Borga's son, Vibi, was the assistant director who I had already worked with before in other movies. So, like, I saw him and right before I walked in. So that was one thing that came up. Was Chris was like, how do you know Vibi? Then we talked about Romer, the films of Eric Romer.
Right.
We talked about...
Chris Rock's a big Eric Romer fan.
Huge fan.
Phenomenal, really.
Yeah. We talked about Woody Allen. Obviously, Chris Rock is a huge Woody Allen fan.
This was a big... I mean, I heard interviews with him saying that this is his kind of... Although it was a remake of a French film, right?
Of an Eric Romer film, yeah.
Yes.
And so we talked about street photography. We talked about our fathers. We talked about our relationships with our families. We talked about children because for Chris it was very important that somebody had real values who was making this movie with him. That one, because the story, he wanted somebody to really understand what the stakes were, what this character was about to give up, and to get that tonally and not just... And so it was important to him that I have a family that I love and that I value. It was also important that I understood comedy and art. And I didn't realize it at the time why. And I guess a day later I asked him, I said, what happened to Charles? And he said, I'm directing. And I said, oh. He said, well, Charles, after a few weeks of talking, is not a Woody Allen fan, or is not as much of a Woody Allen fan as I am. And we didn't see eye to eye on those type of things.
Maybe.
So he said, you know, and I... To me, that, you know, that's quintessential. Like, you know, you, and for comedy, and that's the type of comedy I want to tell. And Chris was amazing. I mean, Chris, he would come in, and we walked through every single scene with a still camera, blocked every single scene, knew exactly what every shot was going to be before we got there. He was just, and he knew what those were in reference to in terms of film history.
Uh-huh.
He's one of the most knowledgeable film guys that you'll ever meet. You know, every scene we would look at a movie and have a reference to. You know, and a lot of them are Manhattan, a lot of them are Annie Hall, right. You know. But also there's Romer, you know. And so
it's amazing. And so what was your visual approach to the... I mean, obviously, you explained some of it just now by saying you blocked every scene. It was obviously very structured and everything. But as far as the quality of light and the quality of I mean, did you live on one lens? Did you want to go a little bit medium wide? Or it looked to me like a fairly medium lens movie.
I mean, a lot of the close-ups were done with 65 mil. So, yes, we weren't doing 135 millimeter close-ups in there. I mean, even when we were in there, they were 65 millimeter close-ups.
Right.
Because we wanted the camera to be an active participant as opposed to a voyeur.
Right.
So in that sense, it's got some of that Romer style where it's, you know, it is, it's there. It's not, it is a 40, it is a 65, it is a 27. It's in those, probably in those three lenses that we lived a lot of the time.
Right.
And they were the Cook S4 lenses because, I'm usually a Zeiss person.
Mm-hmm.
And I love Zeiss lenses. But when I get into a situation where I have a lot of women, instead of doing a lot of filtering, I tend to like
those cooks, I tell you.
Those cooks. The cooks are sort of an equalizer across men and women. It doesn't look like you're switching back and forth and putting a filter on for the women and not for the men. And it's just, so that's what we tended to go with the Cook S4s for that.
But as far as the actual performances are concerned, you know, the reveal of the... What's her name? I forget the name of the actress with the red dress.
Kerry Washington?
Yeah. Well, when she first comes into onto the screen.
Right.
Just, you know, it's like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, I mean, was there? But it also doesn't feel like you ever wanted to over-stylize the movie.
No.
You wanted to keep it natural.
Yeah,
simple, but
a little hint there. Like that moment, we definitely highlight that moment a little.
A little bit.
Yeah.
But not, but let's, I'm saying that very
sure.
complimentary.
Yeah. It
really, you know,
yeah.
But if you're watching, your eye is drawn to her, obviously.
Right. And that was in a real location. That wasn't on a stage.
Right.
So we didn't have as many of the freedoms of, you know, when you're on a stage, you can hang from the grid all sorts of lights and backlight people more easily. When you're in a real practical location, and that was an office space that was, you know, a real office space. So it became, you know, it's a bit more of challenging. You know, you'd like to put a light outside that window, but you're up 27 floors. It isn't going to happen. So so that became, you know, there were challenges like that.
Wow. Any particular sequences from, you know, I'm asking the same question again, but just because it's really good to hear you relate. Any particular sequences from I Think I Love My Wife that
I'm proud of?
Or not even proud of, just that you really think of it as fascinating to watch.
Well, the sequence where he makes the decision to leave her is a really interesting one, because that was a real practical location, too, where he's about to cross the threshold, and he decides, no, I got to leave, and splits out of there. But, I mean, that was a very... probably the funnest one was the silliest one, which is the when they're in Washington, which is Brooklyn, and the, you know, the gunfire goes and he meets up with her ex-boyfriend, and that sort of rumble and fight happens. That's kind of a fun sequence too. I haven't looked at the movie in a long time. I have to look at it again. Yeah, I mean, it was so, we all had so much fun making that movie, I have to look at that again.
I'm going to run some names by you. We're going to play a little audible Rorschach here.
Uh-oh.
You can say whatever you want to say for 30 or 45 seconds.
All right.
Or one sentence. It doesn't matter.
All right.
The recently deceased Harris Avitis.
A beautiful person, wonderful person. One of the reasons I went with my agent, the Scourge Agency, was because of Harris. I mean, he's somebody who changed the look of film and... was just also a beautiful, special person. And,
Favorite movies of his?
What's my favorite movie of
his? You can name a couple, if you want to, you know, because I understand. For me, I think they're all stunning.
Yeah.
Completely different and stunning.
I'm not going to give a favorite, but I think what Harris had, and particularly in terms of his commercial work, was he made people more beautiful than they ever appeared anywhere else, and somehow through underexposure, which I have no idea how he did it.
Right.
I've been trying to figure that out since, you know, forever, and I have no idea how he did it. You know.
But he just did it.
But he just did it, and it was always underexposed. He played the toe of film, and I don't know how that would have translated to the digital world either. So I'm not quite sure how he would have pulled it off.
Right. It's interesting now that you mention that. I start thinking through Mark Ruffalo in Zodiac.
Yep.
Ben Stiller, most recently in Greenberg.
Right.
I think it's Deborah Kerr Unger, I think is who it is, in The Game.
Right. Now, The Game is obviously one of the most stunning
pictures ever
made. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, The Game, where I'm not as in love with the movie itself, his work is incredible. Yeah.
Right. That's amazing. Next name, Roger Deakins.
Roger Deakins is a hero, yeah. I mean, just the simplicity of lighting and camera work, but stunning, stunning imagery.
Imagery every time.
Yeah. I mean, and also being somebody who comes from documentary work, I'm always looking for those type of images that he seems to create so easily and naturally that it's just, another hero. Yeah, amazing. Amazing cinematographer.
Last name, Gordon Willis.
Well, the master of darkness and master of light.
Yeah.
If we could all get away with making shadows on people's eyes like that, it would be fantastic. I mean, everybody's tried. And everybody's comment, but he's truly, you know, but he, you know, there's situations like I did some of Pan Am, the TV series.
Yep. Yeah, the ill-fated shut down after a few.
Yeah, they did a season, and there was a moment where we got to where I got to we were doing a sex scene, and I had Kevin Murphy, a fantastic gaffer who did did Batman Returns, and he was just an amazing gaffer, and he and I started to talk about this approach. I said, "How about we just take a 5K sky pan, put black on the back, and have a single source come through the window. The actress is nervous about her. It's her first sex scene she's ever done. Network obviously wants it, doesn't want to show anything. But how about we do it all in silhouette and just have this one 5K sky pan coming through the window?" And it was something that I had stolen from Gene Ingalls, another great gaffer in New York, that he had showed me a couple of years ago. And so we put it up, we did it, and it was completely silhouette. And the one producer comes over and goes, "We can't see anything." And I just thought of Gordon Willis. I just said,
"Yeah, but it's okay, you can hear them."
Right. And I said, "Well, now when the camera comes over here, you can see." He goes, "Oh, yeah, that's really beautiful." And everybody said, you know, Ron Fortunato was the main DP on the series, and I was just coming in to fill in for a handful of days while he scouted. And he, you know, everybody commented, like, "That was really stunning." And it was totally a Gordon Willis moment. It was borrowed from Gordy, like, you don't need to see their faces. Everyone knows who these two characters are. We just had them in light for scene after scene after scene, and now they're coming to a bedroom. Isn't it more curious about you can't see? And that we owe Gordon Willis for, yeah. So,
William Rexer, thank you for joining us this fast. So we're going to have to come back and do this again.
All right.
And talk about more of your new work.
All right.
And just have more chatting, because this is fascinating. And well, you're a lesson and inspiration to any aspiring DP out there, because you are approaching everything with a positive sense and experimentation. And
I have to say that I have the best job in the whole world, and so I'm very lucky. And you know, one of the things that your questions sort of were suggesting is that, you know, you have these mentors or these, but the reality quite often in what we do is that we have mentors in the gaffers that we hire, the grips that we hire, who work with all these different DPs, who are trading these secrets. Yes. You know, Gene Ingalls worked with Gordon Willis. You know, all these people, Scott Ramsey, you know, just came off the Woody Allen. I mean, they all work with all these different people, and you get, and they give me information every time and teach me every time. And it is the grips, the gaffers, and the operators who are all jumping from DP to DP who share tons and tons of information and who are the people who I get inspiration from. So
you get inspiration from the people who work with you.
That I work with, yeah. And they also are giving me new approaches every single day to another, you know. We walk into a room like this, and I've shot 500 hotel rooms. And, you know.
To you, it's...
I'll try to figure out, how do we approach this in a new way? And an operator said, we just did this. You want to take a look at it? And I look at it, I might say, that's brilliant. Or I might say, oh, no, I'd never do it that way. But I always look at it, because they've just worked with 20 different DPs in the last year. And, you know, I don't work with other DPs. So, you know, so.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
Thanks again, man.
You're welcome.
It was great. That was fabulous. Thank you.